Welcome to What's the Hook with Diane and Andy. Well, Andy, it's the middle of June already. Where did the time go?
It just flies by, Diane.
It really does.
But it's sunny out, so that's good.
This is true. I don't know, in case you haven't heard, you know, LA has had June gloom. And it really lived up to its name this year.
Yeah.
And so today we have actual sunshine, which is glorious. And
it
it's supposed to be sunny all weekend. So
we've had like gloom and rain the entire year.
It's been a very gray time.
Yeah.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times, Andy. But let's talk about positive things. There was a surprise drop from Netflix. New Black Mirror episodes dropped, I think, yesterday. And I think it's like five or six.
I think it's five.
I think it's five.
Yeah. I got through the first three.
And partway
through the fourth.
Through four. Yeah.
But we did pretty good for 24 hours.
Exactly.
We're trying. Yeah.
I'm a bad binger. I'm a bad podcast host. I'm a bad binger.
Oh, you know that I like a binge.
I know you do. But you've been traveling.
But I
got
to like try to keep my other jobs.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Exactly.
I liked it, I would say. It's, you know, it's hit or miss. I feel like it's always, yeah.
Yeah.
Anthology series in general. It's like.
But we both like the season opener with Annie Murphy and Salma Hayek.
So much fun.
And there is a lot of meta humor about Netflix, a.k.a. Streamberry.
I think Streamberry shows up in at least two, the first three episodes.
Three episodes,
which is really funny. And it has the, like, ta-dum sound, even though it's an S instead of an N. So I was like, oh, they're really leaning into this. But it's the first episode has Annie Murphy and Salma Hayek, which, what a funny pairing, like, but great together.
And Salma Hayek in a fabulous yellow jumpsuit.
Oh, yeah.
With big, giant disco platform heels.
Yeah.
Salma Hayek is just... The fact that Salma
Hayek
was
so good.
Was willing to just jump in and do
totally.
This.
Totally. Oh, she's so game. And she had to, like, really... She really went there. But, you know, that episode is kind of all about this idea of what are our stories versus ourselves. And Annie Murphy finds herself thrust into, like... a situation where there's like a movie or a TV show being made about her life in real time, practically in real time.
Well, it's also about literally user-generated content, which has been a long-standing issue in entertainment and in content. Because for a while, you know, that's why YouTube is one of the most watched platforms in the world, if not the most watched platform.
I just heard these statistics. It's so much bigger than everything else,
of course.
Including Netflix and all of those, which I forget. But yeah, you're totally right.
And it's all about user-generated content, or UGC, as it's referred to. So this is all about people's literally boring, humdrum lives being made into shows. There are some more levels to it. And there's also like a nice appearance by Michael Cera. And Rob Delaney turns up, who is so wonderful. Boy, so wonderful in Catastrophe. So always great to see him. And I don't know who played the Streamberry executive, but whoever it was, she was terrific. It's just, it's a lot of fun. It's a fun episode. Great to see Annie Murphy. We love seeing her in anything.
She's a really good actress.
Oh, yeah.
I love the story from Schitt's
Creek. You knew that from Schitt's Creek.
I love that she, I mean, that was not just a fluke. It wasn't like she
not at all.
To be in the right character at the right time. She's been in other great things since then. Makes me just
very talented.
So happy.
Very talented.
And she sets the bar for Salma Hayek pretty high in terms of Salma Hayek's basically playing her in this weird real time, like, UGC, whatever it is, this
well,
like hellscape.
There's different levels of being.
Like meta craziness.
Yes. It's a clever episode. And there's also the second episode called Lock Henry features Mahala Harold, who you know if you watch the show Industry, because she's fabulous on that show.
Yes.
Andy, I know you're a big fan.
I kept meaning to look up. I couldn't place her. And then you came in, you're like, she was from industry. I'm like, of course Diane would remember exactly where she's from.
And then I immediately thought of you because
I love industry.
I do too.
Yeah.
And I think she's particularly fantastic. She leads the show very, very well.
Yeah.
And the episode she's it is hella scary.
It's really scary.
Right. And I'm a chicken, Andy.
I'm not. Like, I sometimes like scary things, but I was like checking my closets afterward. Like, it's very scary. And it's not, what did you think about in terms of like the connection to technology? Because it's not, that's interestingly, this is not about the future. There's no new.
No, it's about literally like skeletons that are in our closets.
It's about like media. By the word media, I mean it's about video. It's not about, but it's not like,
no, what
it's not new tech, it's old technology.
What it's about is it's more about
true crime.
Classic killers who like to have trophies. I don't want to say anything because
true.
I don't want to spoil
and
things.
It's about true crime.
Yes.
Because this
very much.
It's the storyline is driven by her desire to find a story that they can make a freaking podcast out of and get
a film out of yes,
and get, you know. Get,
oh, there's a
famous.
Lot of skewering of show business in this episode as well, and this time they do it with the BAFTAs. But there's a lot of skewering of the business in that, and it's done very well and it's very smart. But it is very scary. I don't think I watched late at night. I think I was watching early enough in the day where I could divert myself.
Yeah, good for you.
But it definitely scared me. My embarrassing admission now is I was watching another episode, the Beyond the Sea episode, and I did not recognize Josh Hartnett.
I can't believe you didn't recognize Josh Hartnett, well, first of all.
It's been too long, Josh Hartnett. The nerve to not
recognize the
mea culpa.
The gorgeousness of Josh Hartnett. No, but he really isn't in a lot. I think he was like, he was one of these people that was supposed to become a major
star.
A-lister. And he probably, right. I would still call him an A-lister, but he's very picky about the shows and movies he does, I think.
I think after Penny Dreadful, he kind of just dropped off the radar a bit.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
But even before Penny Dreadful, I feel like he must have chosen that as something he really wanted to do.
I remember he did a movie with Bruce Willis, but it was years ago. And people like loved him and thought he was hot. And I think he did a couple rom-coms. But all of a sudden it was like, he just wasn't working a lot. So I did not even know it was him, but he's in an episode with Aaron Paul and Kate Mara.
And when you say episode, it's 80 minutes, which is a movie.
It's long.
It's very long. Was not my favorite episode.
Andy and I are not doing well with these super long episodes.
Well, no. I mean, and it was, and just frankly, it was just not my favorite of this new season. I found it to be long.
That's okay.
And I can't, it's very, yeah.
Do you know what? You can't like everything. It's okay.
No, that's true. That's true. But
I do want to say,
it's set in outer space and these two guys that are on a 6-year mission.
It's not, well, like,
well, they have a,
no, it's not quite outer space.
Well, they're in outer space, but they have these like the links. They have like these animatronic, anamorphic, or whatever, like beings on Earth.
They have replicas.
Replicas that are serving as their.
Andy, I don't know if you're pitching this right.
It's the real people are in outer space.
Okay, but I'm not sure of that, but okay.
They're on a spaceship.
Okay.
They're on a spaceship.
Okay.
But it's very like much about, you know, future technology that doesn't exist, and
then it kind of becomes like, I'm gonna steal your woman.
Totally.
That's the vibe I got, but I still haven't finished the episode. It's really long. Yeah. It's too long for me.
It's so long.
I'm gonna finish it because now I'm determined.
I mean, I did not think it's great. But
the other pitch I want to make is there's another episode that features Zazie Beetz, who we love, from Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And she's in an episode that has a really great supernatural angle to it. And that's all I'm going to say about
it.
I'm
excited.
I'm
like halfway into this episode and I haven't gotten there yet.
Oh, okay.
I'm super excited.
Okay, then that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, she's like a paparazzi kind of.
And I still
like,
have one whole episode.
Yeah, we both
to
have,
watch
like
the last, the fifth episode.
Yeah.
So, Andy, let's turn to another show we both watched, the second episode of The Idol. First of all, I'm just going to throw this out there. You know, I read Page Six and I read stuff in the New York Post, even though they are a right-leaning newspaper, and they are wretched. They're absolutely wretched. I'm just going to say it. But Page Six still does gossip like nobody else does gossip. And they have such a hatred for The Idol that they started a rumor that HBO was not picking up the show for a second season. And they basically had no source
for
that.
They're basically trolling.
They are.
I love it.
They're just starting shit.
Yeah.
Just... And then, did you say HBO issued, like, somebody issued a statement
PR,
saying...
The HBO PR Twitter put out a thing saying, we haven't made up our
decision.
Minds,
right.
And yada yada.
Right.
I mean, this show is just a steaming pile of insanity.
You know, it was trouble during production because Amy Simons, who is the original director...
Who was the Girlfriend Experience? Did you ever watch that?
I sure
that was
did.
A very good show.
It's a very interesting. Riley Keough.
Very interesting. Oh, it was.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, and that was about, you know, it was basically about escorts. Can we use that word?
Yes.
Escorts. Yeah, but you know, women.
But they
who
provided
were,
the girlfriend experience.
The girlfriend experience,
not
the sex. Just, yeah, and it was a really fascinating, you know, look at sex work and women having agency.
Yes.
And it was very thoughtful, and it didn't really come down super hard on, like, an idealist. It wasn't ideological in terms of, like, being anti-sex work or pro-sex work necessarily.
It wasn't preachy.
It was just a kind of an interesting look at that world. And it takes me back to the Rolling Stone article, which, like, came out, you know, what, like, a few weeks before the first episode
of
The Idol dropped.
Yeah.
And said that they got rid of Amy Simons.
Yeah.
To because the show had too much of a female viewpoint.
Exactly. Can you believe that?
And
shit?
that The Weeknd, Abel Tesfaye, was like
horrible.
And he
a diva.
He's awful. He's like a zero in this show.
And he's trying to rebrand himself. He's trying to like use his real name now.
Yeah.
Not be The Weeknd all the time.
Yeah.
And I think this will dent the proceedings a little bit, and I'm okay with that.
You know
that.
What it reminds me of? Okay,
tell
so
me.
Like, well, okay, so first of all, you know, like, I'm a Madonna, like, fanatic, like, ends of the earth.
The queen of reinvention.
Like, I love her so much. And by the way, the first episode had the best use of, like, a prayer ever. Like, it was really good.
Great point.
But, okay, and then they've been, like, and then she, like, is one of the singers in the song that came out, which is actually charting. It's called Popular. It's from the show. And then they've been like tweeting back and forth about working together. And I realize they are very similar and that they are both better as musicians than actors. They're both zeros as actors.
Sometimes you can't be great at everything.
No.
I think Gaga is like that rare exception.
Yes.
Where she's a great actress.
She's an amazing actress.
And a fabulous singer.
Yeah.
Fabulous musician.
Yes, absolutely.
Wonderful songwriter.
Yeah.
Look, as I think we have said, and many others have said, the only one coming out of this looking any good is Lily Rose Depp.
Yep.
Because people are like, oh, but she can act, and
yes.
Saying she deserves better, which she of course does. And I know they're trying to get a rise out of people. I understand that, but it's especially gross and disgusting.
It's just like, that's all they're doing.
There's
no one to root for. It's not funny. It's not.
It's just pointless.
It's not.
It's
clever.
Pointless.
It's completely pointless. Everybody in it sucks. There's nothing about it that's like.
And I know they lost 100,000 viewers from episode one to episode two. I'm very curious to see how it's going to do this Sunday.
Yeah.
Gee, the perfect Father's Day viewing.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I don't know if anyone's talked to The Weeknd or Abel since this whole thing has begun. But people were especially infuriated about the second episode because there was a graphic sex scene and it was icky.
It's
it was gross.
So icky. And I am not averse to like
no,
sex scenes.
You
nudity.
Like your raunch.
I'm like, go for it. Like I have no issue.
I'm
with
all
it.
For sexy.
But this is like gratuitous. And which is not a word that I use very much, but this is actually gratuitous where it just feels like he's living out a fantasy because he's got the power to do so on camera.
And then we're back to things like the male gaze, you know, just back to
it's so male gazy. And there's no male nudity anywhere in this.
God forbid.
It's all about her.
HBO, the one place where you can see a dick.
Yeah. Yeah, I read that today. Somebody was like, but if he doesn't start showing some skin really soon, people are going to be mad.
But the only dick you see is Abel, and it's not his actual dick.
No, it's just he's a dick. Exactly. I just drove that pun into the ground.
Thank you very much. That's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
You drove that dick right into the dirt.
The only compelling storyline, which is kind of compelling, is her, kind of attempt to reinvent herself and have a comeback after this breakdown. But it's just like, you don't know who you're rooting for, because she doesn't really have that much control over her career. But then she lands with him and he's manipulating her into his own vision of what he wants her to be, which is basically like a sex slave. So it's like,
supposedly he's supposed to have the vibe of a cult leader.
Yeah, because he's got these like people that follow him around, and now they've moved into the house practically with
her. They also have people like Hank Azaria plays her manager, Chaim.
Yeah.
And he is watching out for Jocelyn. And and then they have Jane Addams, who's a manager who doesn't seem to be looking out for Jocelyn.
I love me some Jane Addams, but woof.
Yeah, like, well, it's a tough role.
It's a real tough
role. She's supposed to be really unlikable.
I hope she's making really good money for this.
I think she's kind of been around the HBO universe for a while, so I'm sure she's being paid well.
Yeah.
And nice to see Daniel Levy as the publicist. I don't know if he'll turn up again.
Uh-huh. Troye Sivan is like the creative director.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, he's fine.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah. Hari Neff as the Vanity Fair reporter, by the way, which is really laughable because no reporter would be granted that much access.
Oh my God. So unless you're Chris Licht at CNN.
Good callback. Good callback.
Right?
Woo. But I love Hari Neff. So nice to see Hari Neff on screen.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. Yeah, it's an icky show.
It's icky.
And speaking of icky, Andy, we both wound up watching Shiny Happy People. Oh,
God, more ickiness.
A documentary on Prime Video about the Duggars.
The Duggars, which I never watched a single episode of any of those shows.
I was very creeped out by those shows. I don't know about you.
Like 19 and counting, and then a million and counting, families with all the
we've lost count.
Kids.
We don't know how many children
we
have.
Like,
but then the Duggar name kept coming up in the news because of Josh Duggar.
Yeah.
Who it turned out had a lot of child porn on his computer.
Just so insanely disturbing.
Very.
And I haven't finished this documentary series. I think there's four episodes.
I think so, and I haven't either. I watched the first one.
The third one. I honestly feel like you get the point after like the second one. You're
I would
like,
agree
okay,
with you.
I get it. My biggest question is, how did anybody not think this family was super creepy and there was something super wrong here?
I think the thing is, look, I have a distrust of kind of the Bible beating set.
Well, I do too. Yeah.
I respect. Look, if Jesus is a comfort to you, okay. I will respect that, and I respect people's right to practice their religion. But I was just always creeped out by the volume of children.
Yeah.
And I think 19 children is just way, way, way too much in these times.
My religious philosophy is Jesus, save me from your followers. And I think the people that talk about Jesus the most actually have by far the least idea of what Jesus was actually like.
And are the least Christian sometimes.
The least Christian and the most judgmental and weird and like just no, it's not good. And so of course, like behind the scenes of this like happy family was like a very controlling, father of really weird, practically cult-like religious sect that they were a part of.
Right.
The kids were basically free labor. Like they were free labor. There's a lot about that.
Because they had to take care of each other since there were so many of them.
Sorry, I mean free labor for the networks. The network. All the money that got paid went to the father. The kids never got any of it. And then even when they were older and started having more storylines of their own, they were told by... It's Discovery, right? Or whatever it was at the time.
It was TLC at the time. Yeah, which is part of Discovery.
One of the daughters she got married. And anyway, she went to TLC and said, can we at least get like something for what we're doing? And they're like, no, it went to your father. They paid your. So they never got anything.
And he never put it in a trust for them, obviously.
I don't think so.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah. So there's a lot of like,
and the only
kids that I don't think are in contact with the family.
I think it's very relevant now because with social media being the way it is, you know, and especially again, going back to the YouTube thing, there are a lot of families that make money off of blogging about their families.
Yeah, you're right.
And, you know, they do it when their kids are young. And as their kids grow up, they discover they don't really like being on the internet all the time.
Totally. And they can have a choice in the matter.
And there are kids that grow up and they cut off contact with their parents.
Yeah.
But their parents make a lot of money from doing that.
Yeah.
And, you know, how much should you make money off of your children? I think it's a little different when maybe you have a kid that you think is right for commercials. So you take them and maybe they do some commercials. My theory has always been, you know what? It's college money. Let them do it if they have fun doing it. And the minute they don't have fun, you're like, okay, you're back to being a kid.
It's just hard because there's examples of it working out, you know, and kids making a transition into adulthood, either being famous or not being famous and having a healthy adulthood. But then you've got the Drew Barrymores and the Britney Spears and the other, you know, people that were sort of stage-mommed into like...
Some things have a better trajectory than others. Drew Barrymore went through so many different stages and turned out so, so, so beautifully.
She had a horrible time.
Jason Bateman, her
young life.
Could have really burned himself out. You know, he had a lot of success on Silver Spoons.
Yeah.
And then had a drug problem right along with it.
Yeah.
Got cleaned up. Met Paul Anka's daughter, Amanda. Has a beautiful family. He's like a director, a producer, a thriving actor. You know, he very much like turned himself around. So, you know, and then you have people like Rick Schroeder, who is also a child star on Silver Spoons. I don't know if he's ever had any substance problems, but now he's like a hardcore right-wing conservative.
Yeah.
You know, living in the mountains, I wouldn't be surprised to find out he's a doomsday prepper. Oh, I bet that's a possibility.
Right. Wasn't he running out? Wasn't he like on a whole anti-mask tirade?
I think he was.
Yeah.
I think he was.
During the pandemic.
So, you know, it's hard. Being in show business when you're young is hard. I feel for the Duggar kids. I don't think it's good when kids don't have a choice.
Yeah, right.
You don't want to have your childhood taken away from you without your say-so.
And that family couldn't support itself, I don't think, without the show.
That I don't know. That's a great point.
I'm pretty sure they were living in a really small house, and then they were able to build a big house with the money. But I don't think the kids got any of it.
Yeah. So anyway, that's Shiny Happy People on Prime Video. And yeah, it can be tough to watch. But it is there for you. That is, I think it's three or four parts of that documentary.
Parts. I probably will not watch the rest because I got enough already.
You fed your fill.
I get it. I get the picture and I'm ready to move on, but yes.
I would like to segue to something a little lighter and funnier.
Oh, please.
Because one of the highlights of this past week for me, you know, as an avid Bravo watcher, Watch What Happens Live is just in its golden era right now. And true to form, Andy Cohen had John Hamm and John Slattery on. John Slattery directed this movie, Maggie Moores, and John Hamm is in the movie. Tina Fey is in the movie. So Hamm and Slattery back together, you know, and if you're a Mad Men fan like I am, a devotee, they were fabulous as they've been doing this press tour for Maggie Moores. So they're on Watch What Happens Live, and Andy Cohen has them do like Bravo Liberty Theater. And he has them do a scene from the Vanderpump Rules reunion. So John Hamm played James Kennedy. and John Slattery played Tom Sandoval. And honestly, just go to the Bravo WWHL Instagram feed and watch the clip, because it will bring you joy. John Hamm, master thespian that he is, nails James Kennedy.
Oh, I love this.
And it's just so hilarious. I have watched it many, many times.
Oh, I'm going to watch.
Like, as many times.
Can we talk about the thing that's brought me the most joy this week?
Yes,
far.
Tell me.
Was Diane sending me this morning Phil Dunster reading thirst tweets for BuzzFeed. Yeah,
for
about
BuzzFeed.
Himself.
Thanks to the nice people at BuzzFeed
Thank you to those wonderful people at BuzzFeed for creating this, because it was just a
joy. Phil Dunster just looking like a snack.
Looking like a snack and reading thirsty tweets about him. And what a good sport. And
I love that he's a grammar fanatic.
Oh, yeah.
And when he goes, there's no punctuation.
He's like, there's no punctuation. And then he's like reading it in different, you know, like he's doing different readings based on like if you punctuated it, it could be this, it could be that. And he's like concerned that there's a lot of people that are willing to like take a lot of pain and torture in order to be with him. And he also calls himself mostly straight, which I was like, oh,
Andy
my
is really
God.
Banking on that.
So you're saying there's a chance.
That's made Andy so hopeful.
Yeah. Yeah. It has.
I will say Phil Dunster is just delicious.
He is delicious, and he's so funny, and he's so sweet. I feel like I'm going to have to write some thirsty tweets now.
I think you should.
So that he'll read them on air.
I like that one of the thirsty tweets was about how they love how he says Keely.
Yes.
But really it's when he says Keely.
Keely. They really played up that accent
This
season.
Oh,
I felt like the last season they really, and I was wondering, I was like, is he really talk like that? But no, he was really putting
he
it
on. He played
it
up, definitely. Yeah.
Is it Scottish? I don't know like what. I don't know exactly what it was.
I don't think he's Welsh, but I would have to look it up.
Oh,
I'd have to look it up.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if the character is supposed to be Welsh.
I'm not sure. I can't do it. It's Yas.
But you know, I'm still so in love with the Jamie Roy bromance.
Oh, yes.
From this season, that Amsterdam episode with them riding bikes through Amsterdam. You can't even forget it. It's so wonderful.
Yeah, there's a particularly vivid tweet that he reads about himself and Roy that I won't repeat.
No,
here,
no,
anyway,
it's not safe for work.
Go to YouTube and
YouTube.
Watch it.
It's wonderful. Phil Dunster also put it on his Instagram feed, which is also and also shout out because Phil Dunster works with a great stylist, Warren Alfie Baker.
Oh,
he's been doing all
of these
like FYC things in Los Angeles, and he looks so cute.
Warren is
a
massive presence.
He is always just kitted out so beautifully.
Oh, wow.
It's just, he looks so handsome.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yes, we're just looking at cute boys. Andy and I are both looking at cute boys. I also wanted to say, I'm going to make another confession. I finally started to watch For All Mankind on Apple TV Plus. And I'm kicking myself for waiting as long as I have. I think I watched the first episode years ago when it came out. And for some reason, I did not continue. And now I am almost done with season one and crying my eyes out.
Oh, wow.
And it is so beautiful. And it is so meticulously made. Shout out to Ron Moore, who, you know, everyone knows from like Outlander and Battlestar Galactica. This is just such a moving and beautiful show.
And can you just remind, first of all, I've heard other people say this is when they've gone back. They like discovered much late. This was one of the early Apple TV Plus shows.
It is. It is. It was one of the early ones.
Two seasons or three?
Three seasons. And I think the third one's the final one.
Okay.
And it is about the evolution of the American space program.
Okay.
So Joel Kinnaman is in it. He is one of the main players in it. Absolutely terrific. Just a fabulous performance.
Wow, yeah.
But there aren't any weak links in this show. They're all really terrific. I mean, I would not criticize any of the talent in the show. I think they're all very, very good. There is an episode I watched the other day. I think it might have been episode 6 or 7. And I literally was just weeping by the end of the episode. I'm not going to... I would say spoiler alert, but it's old now. I mean, it's like years old now.
But also, most people probably haven't watched it.
It's gorgeous, though. It's a gorgeous series. I regret waiting so long, and I'm So now, they're hour-long episodes. You'll want to be aware of that, so pace yourself.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's beautiful.
Well, as the writer's strike lingers on, we may need to revisit some
of these
shows.
Exactly. Things you missed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about that on an upcoming episode. You know, shows you might have missed, shows you might have overlooked. We'll talk about that in a future episode to make sure you have stuff to watch, you know, because we stand behind the writers. We want them to make a good living.
Yes.
We want everybody to be able to make a living writing. That's very important for the future of storytelling. So we will do that work for you. We'll also make sure that we repost some interviews we've done.
Yeah.
Because we want you to be aware of some of the great people who are in contention for Emmys this year. So we'll be doing that. Speaking of interviews, I had a wonderful chat with Krista Miller from Shrinking. And if you are an avid TV watcher, you know her from way back when, from The Drew Carey Show, from Scrubs, from Cougar Town. And she happens to be married to Bill Lawrence, who is just an A-list showrunner who worked on the first couple seasons of Ted Lasso, who's also one of the showrunners with Brett Goldstein and creators on Shrinking. And Krista Miller not only acts in Shrinking, but she's also one of the music supervisors on the show. And we had a very lively chat about not only her acting work on the show, working with the new comedy sensation that is Harrison Ford, but about how she chose music for the show. And, you know, some of the other great members of the cast, like Ted McGinley and Lukita Maxwell, so many good people on Shrinking. And if you haven't watched that, you need to get on that. That's on Apple TV Plus. So we're gonna put that in, with this week's episode, and you can stay tuned and listen to that. Andy, should we get to some upcoming shows?
Yeah.
Okay. I think we've mentioned Jagged Mind before. That is now streaming on Hulu, and it is a psychological thriller starring Shannon Woodward and Maisie Richardson Sellers. The Droughtlander is over. Outlander returns tonight. Season 7 premieres. I think if there's one or two episodes, probably just one, but they're splitting the season in two parts. So the second half's going to air. I have 2023, but I think I meant 2024.
I read they haven't told us yet, but probably in 2024. Yeah.
And then one of our faves, John Early, has a new HBO special called Now More Than Ever.
I mean, just the name alone. It's right. I just can't wait to watch this.
And that is premiering tomorrow, the 17th on HBO, and then streaming on Max, of course. I also wanted to mention, if you are a Yellowstone fan and you do not have a Paramount Plus subscription, the Paramount Network on regular old linear cable is going to start airing 1883, which is one of the Yellowstone prequels.
Oh, funny. It was only on Paramount Plus.
Yes.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And 1883 is a show that stars Faith Hill and her husband, Tim, the country superstar.
McGraw?
Thank you.
Wow. Wow. I don't know
where. Any way to pull it out.
Wow. I'm impressed with myself.
And so that's going to start airing on Sundays. So just like Yellowstone did, because I don't think we're going to see new Yellowstone episodes this year.
Yeah.
Given the writer's strike. And also, evidently, there was a little note in Kevin Costner's divorce papers that said that he wasn't planning to be on location anytime this year.
Oh, my God.
And as we all know, there's been some friction between Costner and the Yellowstone folks.
Who is he? Who does he?
I think ego out of control. Absolutely out of control.
Never liked him.
Anyway, so you can watch 1883 starting this Sunday, June 18th. On the Paramount Network. If you have a Paramount Plus subscription, you might already be watching it, because it does still stream there. Also, this Sunday, June 18th, on HBO, The Righteous Gemstones are back. Danny McBride, Walton Goggins, Edie Patterson, Andy Devine. Oh my gosh, this comedy is just killer. It's going to be the final season of the show. Jody Hill and Danny McBride are the showrunners. And geez, this show, it does its own thing so well. I just love the show. It just makes me giggle endlessly. So I'm excited for that. And let's see, what do we got? Secret Invasion is coming up June 21st on Disney Plus, and that is Samuel L. Jackson's Marvel character, Nick. I knew I'd forget his last name, but anyway, he's the star of that. And of course, I'm really psyched. June 22nd, season 2 of The Bear is dropping on Hulu.
Yes.
And I have been told that it is really, really good, which I don't doubt. I'm still doing my season one rewatch, like a little bit every night.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I better get on that.
It's so, so good.
Yeah.
Oh,
one of the best.
It's a really excellent rewatch.
Oh my God.
Want to reiterate that. It's a really excellent rewatch. You catch things.
Yeah.
You know, they really lay things in nicely. Just shout out to Chris Storer and his sister Courtney Storer, who's a chef and a food stylist on the show. And
Ayo Edebiri.
Ayo Edebiri was wonderful.
She was just in
she was just in Black Mirror. She's in that first episode of Black Mirror.
You know, that show we just talked about. Black Mirror. Yes. Yes. I love when she shows up on anything.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. And then on June 22nd, season two of And Just Like That is premiering on Max.
I'm going to have to do it.
I started watching screeners.
Okay.
And I'm just going to say there are better jokes.
Oh.
More great fashion and better jokes.
Oh, than the last season.
You will get no spoilers from me.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And also on June 22nd over on Netflix, our last item, Glamorous. And I'm especially interested in it because Kim Cattrall stars in it. And great to see Kim Cattrall in pretty much anything. And a performer I was not familiar with because I'm old, Miss Penny.
Yes.
But I assume the internet and the kids all
probably
know who Miss Penny is.
Yes, yes. I've watched a few episodes of this.
How would you tease it, Andy?
It's a featherweight, very, very colorful and fun romp through a very fairy tale version of New York, you know, kind
like
of
the New York
beauty industry.
Beauty world.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's fun.
And Miss Penny plays a character who is like a beauty influencer.
Yes.
You know, and has a big TikTok following and loves the beauty industry and gets their first real job at a cosmetics company run by Kim Cattrall's character.
Yeah. And her son.
A lot of fun.
We shouldn't
say anything more. Yeah. But that's going to drop on June 22nd on Netflix.
We can talk about it next week.
Yes, we'll talk more about it next week.
It's a cute one.
And again, just a reminder, stay tuned for the Krista Miller chat because it really was so much fun. She's just terrific. And we will talk to you next week. Hi, everyone. Welcome to What's the Hook? Diane here talking to Krista Miller. You know Krista Miller because you've been watching her on television. We've been watching her on television for a long time. Most people remember the Drew Carey Show, but she was also on incredible series like Cougar Town and Scrubs and in the recent hit Shrinking on Apple TV Plus. Krista, thank you so much for taking some time to talk today.
Thank you for having me. Nice to meet you.
It's nice to meet you too. I'm just wondering, first off, you've been working for a long time. You've had a long career. And what do you think are some of the biggest changes in comedy that you've noticed?
I think in comedy used to be really only sitcoms. And you know, like Drew Carey and Friends and Spin City and those kinds of shows. And then they went into single camera comedy, which would be like Scrubs and Modern Family. And you're still playing for the joke, you know, you're still, but without a laugh track. And then now with streaming, it feels like it's still a comedy, but it has a lot of emotion that can go along with it. And it's more character-driven comedy as opposed to playing for the jokes.
Which is very much what Shrinking, that is the wheelhouse that Shrinking is in. I mean, I think there's still a good amount of comedy in it. And I think you're one of the big drivers of that, as well as that comedy ingenue, Harrison Ford.
Oh my goodness. He kills me. I always knew he was funny. I kind of knew Harrison. He's my neighbor. And also, Callista is also hysterical. The two of them are really, really funny. So I kind of knew that.
I love that.
Yeah, he's in real life. He's so dry. He's really funny. But I wondered if it was going to translate because he's so dry. And It does.
Totally. I mean, it's
really funny. He's also having a really good time. He keeps, like, after we've finished work, he'll say, this job is really, this is so fun. This writing is really funny. This is such a fun job to do. I was like, I know, this is TV.
That must make your husband, Bill Lawrence, and Brett Goldstein very happy to hear.
They're so happy. He will say this is the best job ever. Like, it's just also because we're laughing all day. And I think you, for also, we move really quickly. I don't think he was used to fun of moving quickly, you know, of coming from an Indiana Jones that you're doing half a page in a day.
Complicated setups, too.
Yeah, complicated setups, and you have to keep doing, and we're just whizzing through, and then having playing with the dialogue, because when you're moving quickly, you can try it seven different ways.
Yeah. It just, the show works so well. And I also want to note that your character, Liz, you have really interesting, you have a lot of your interaction. We're introduced to Liz really by her relationship with Lukita Maxwell's character, Alice, who is still reeling from the death of her mom. And it's a really beautiful relationship. How Liz just basically steps up because Jason Segel's character can't cope.
Right.
And I cannot tell you how much it made my heart swell just watching the two of you together. Can you talk a little bit about working with Lukita and working that out?
Yeah. You know, when she came in, I mean, she's probably, you know, she had done another job before. I mean, she's pretty new. And she looks like my daughter and isn't the same age as my daughter.
Do you mean the pop star Charlotte Lawrence?
Pop star Charlotte Lawrence. And also now pop star Charlotte Lawrence and Lukita are besties.
I love that.
Charlotte had a birthday party. Lukita was there. And Charlotte and I ran into Lukita at a party. And then she and Charlotte went out. Like,
of course. So
she looks like Charlotte. If you look at them, it's funny. They look very similar. And they're just similar. And so I immediately could work with that and glom into that. And Lukita is also so lovely, you know, came into it very respectful, happy to be there. And then it was just easy to have that relationship. It was like built in. She looks like Charlotte and has the sweetness. Charlotte Lawrence, my daughter, is very warm, much nicer than I am. No, she's so warm and sweet. You know, she meets you once, and then a year later, she'll see you and give you a big hug, like, and know your name. And like, she's so, and Lukita's like that as well. It was easy. It was built in.
That's really beautiful. And it makes me understand even more why your scenes together work so well. Now, another scene partner that you have who's a lot more experienced is Ted McGinley.
Who
literally like took everyone by surprise as Derek.
Comedy assassin. First of all, do you know that, Bill has been wanting to work with Ted McGinley forever. And for whatever reason, like Ted McGinley would, one time he was up for this huge, I'm not even going to say the shows that Bill wanted to cast him in. And he just choked. He would say it too. So I'm not speaking out of school. He just choked. And then what, you know, like whatever reason, Bill would say to Ted, I'm going to work with you. And then when they were casting for my husband, Bill, I know they were looking at different stand-up comedians, and I said, it has to be someone cute. I need to have this handsome husband. And I envision him as like, we have a sexy, you know, marriage. And Bill goes, what about Ted McGinley? He goes, and then I'm going to hire him as recurring. And then he doesn't have to test for the network. So he can't choke. And we're just going to get him on the show. I was like, oh my God, brilliant.
Totally.
And now Ted McGinley, of course, is a series regular because he's the comedy assassin and steals every scene that he's in. Steals it away.
You two had one of my favorite scenes of the series where he basically tells Liz, no, no, honey, it's my turn to stay home.
Not my favorite scene.
Oh, you were so
really
good.
Annoying. I was so mad. I was like,
it was great.
Go out of the house.
The one thing, when I watch you work, I say this as a huge, you make it look very easy. And the one thing I really know about comedy, just because I've worked in entertainment my whole life, comedy is not easy. And it's certainly not easy to make it look easy. My hat is off to you, because just over the years, and I think part of it is just you have one of the best dry deliveries, just almost in any role you've done, just very dry. So, and it really worked for Liz. But Liz and Derek, boy, one of my favorite TV couples. And I have to say, I loved you with Jessica Williams. I felt like with Gabby, Liz came to some very big realizations about her life and about herself. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that came to pass?
Well, you know, I wanted to not make, I didn't want Liz to be like the nosy neighbor that was annoying. And I wanted to take away from that. So I thought, well, I'm going to make her accountable, you know, have someone that will be accountable for what's going on and be able to listen and be able to read the room. And, you know, I've had a lot of, because I've worked through my kids being in school and everything. And those moms that are on top of it, the PTA moms that are the class moms that know where everyone's supposed to go and the teachers and the thing, which is so much in elementary school in particular, it saved my ass and weren't annoying, that were great. I kind of based her on that, you know, like to be, she's trying to step in to be great, but also be accountable. Because I feel like if you're not accountable, it wouldn't, if she wasn't accountable, it wouldn't work. So I think maybe not at the moment, maybe she's mad with Jessica at the moment when they have a thing. And then afterwards, she thinks about it and knows she has to make a change.
I think it's also a tribute to Bill and Brett and all of the writers on the show is that none of the characters are one note. Everybody has dimension. Everybody is very human and has their flaws and has their eccentricities, peccadilloes, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, and the writing is phenomenal. And you know how I know when it's good writing is that when you get a script, just say you'll get a script that's last minute and you have your things and you can memorize it so quickly because it makes sense. And the words, I always know, like, especially when I get sent other scripts and, you know, they're saying, put yourself on tape. If I can't memorize it, I'm like, there's something off with the dialogue, because if it's a really well-written script, you can memorize it very, very easily.
Does that go to it just feeling organic and natural to your character?
It's even in the beginning, though, when I didn't know my character, it's just the dialogue makes sense. Like, it's just the give and take. It makes sense. It makes sense you'd say this. But I do think everyone is different. Not everyone is talking in the same cadence, has the same sense of humor. You know, they really have made space to give room to everyone's different personalities, which I'm so lucky to be on a show like that.
And it's great because it seems like everyone gets their moment, but it doesn't feel overcalculated. And now that we know that the show did get a second season pickup, personally, I would like to know, will Liz and Paul be getting high at parties together sometime in season two? Because I love that. That was also a favorite thing.
When Bill said to me, he goes, you are going to be on a couch for this whole party, being stoned with Harrison Ford. I was like, that's the best thing I've ever, that's my favorite week ever. We had so much fun. Cause you know, when you're acting like you're stoned, all of a sudden you're feeling like you're stoned.
Of course.
Feels like you're stoned. Yeah. I think they should be getting stoned a lot.
I endorse this. Can I second that?
Yeah. I'm going to tell Bill.
Convey that to Bill and Brett, because I think it's a really good idea. Maybe even some spin-off web content.
Spin-off web, or just Harrison and I just getting stoned.
Okay, I'd vote for that as well. Hey, good times. Good times. So as we've been mentioning Bill, so I can see all the upsides of working with Bill. For one, he's just a great showrunner. He's a really good writer, and he's made his bones over many years, and he's written a lot of good shows. He's written shows that maybe don't work all the time. He just knows the ins and outs so well. Is there a downside to working with your husband?
You know, why it works for us is because he's so smart at work and so good at his job. And he also has no ego. For all the success he has zero ego. So if you say, can I try this joke? Or another writer says, what about this? Try it. You know, he doesn't have an ego about that. And he's just so good at doing 100 things. At home, he's so dumb. He's so dumb and annoying. We're in New York right now. And he's just like, what are we going to do? Are we going to ride bikes? Are we going to, I'm like, oh my God, stop for 1 second. Can we just stop? It's pouring rain. Can we just, so working with him is very sexy because I get to see him be sexy and smart.
Well, there's, you know, that must make him feel so good to hear you say that.
Yes, it does. We only sometimes fight about the music because, you know, I'm the music supervisor on the show. So, right.
But this, and I know Charlotte's music has been featured.
I mean, I would have every song with Charlotte's, but that can't be possible. But we have sometimes we'll fight about the music, but that's fine. He's my boss. So he's really my boss when it comes to the music.
Oh, I see. How do you discover music for the show? Have you discovered it through Charlotte? Because, I mean, I know a lot of people will discover music through their kids or what their kids are listening to, or
some. I have Charlotte. I have my other kids. My two boys will sometimes give me music. I have a couple choice friends that send me music. Zach Braff will help me. I go down wormholes. The labels send me music. It's like a whole. It's a whole thing. I try to bank
That's a big job.
Yeah. I have a partner as well, Tony Von Purview, and he helps me as well. But I try to bank as much as I can before we start. So then during the week, I have in my head while we're shooting, I'm like, that song would be good here. This song would be, and I can listen to it on the way to work. You know, it's so great doing the music on a show that I'm on because I really, when I'm reading the script, I'm like, oh, that's a great song for here. You know,
I love that. It was also great to see Wendy Malick come in towards the end of the season as Harrison Ford's love interest.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm a little older. So, like, I did watch Just Shoot Me, and I've seen her on, you know, a whole host of shows. And wow, she's just also kind of a comedy expert. You can bring her in.
So good.
She's an MVP. She'll always deliver. Yep. So.
And they have great chemistry, I think.
Yes.
And she looks amazing and they're funny together. I think they really work together. You know, I think she's very funny. Harrison gets a kick out of her and she vice versa. So I think it's fun to watch them together.
I'm hoping to see more of them in season two as well.
Yes.
So for season two, are you allowed to tease? Will we see more of Liz getting involved with the food truck with the food truck business as she really wanted to do? I don't want to make you speak out of school. So
I think season two, what I've heard is that Liz has got to really figure out what she's going to do with her life. And I think it's hard.
Okay.
I think it's hard to have been a mom and devoted your life to that, and then have had out of thin air, figure out something else to do.
Besides the rock collection, of course.
Well, I mean, I listen, if I was Liz, I would just do rocks all day, but I don't think that's feasible. But yeah, aside from doing rocks.
And what's been your favorite thing about working on Shrinking?
Oh my goodness. On this show, everyone is bringing their A game. Everyone's when they call you on set, everyone's there in 1 minute. No one's ever been late. I've never waited for anyone. Everyone knows their lines backwards and forwards. Everyone has this joy and gratitude for being there. And it's like to be with such a big ensemble and down from Bill, Brett, Jason, it's sets the tone for everyone being lovely. I know a lot of the crew because Bill hires the same crew from show to show.
Sure.
Our AD is Ben Weiss, who was our AD on Cougar Town, who I love and makes me feel safe. And it's a really safe set. You know, Jason says, like, if we haven't failed 5 times and tried a joke that didn't work and heard crickets or were too big in a grief moment, then it wasn't a good day. So it's like a totally different experience. Like at the end of the day, it's good if you failed five times and you can feel good that you did some good work.
I was just happy when I saw this show come together because Jason Segel took a little time out from his career. He was like, show business freaked him out a little and he went to Ojai. And I was like, good for you, man. That's exactly what you should do. Like, step away, do things you really want to do, do things. And like I said, it was great to see you in this show. And I was like, oh, this is so, there's something wonderful about the familiarity. There's these great newer performers as well. But seeing like you, I'm a big Jessica Williams fan as well.
I am too.
I think everyone's a Harrison Ford fan.
Yes, everyone.
And also lovely to see Michael Urie in this cast.
Oh, and Michael Urie. I mean, he's so funny. He makes me laugh also every time. We rewind. When I'm putting in the music and I'm seeing long cuts when I put the music in, right. And Michael Urie will do something and I have to rewind it. And I'm like, forget that I'm doing the music. I have to rewind to see Michael. What did he just do?
The ultimate compliment. Now, given the strike situation, you guys are not shooting or anything, right?
No, we were supposed to be shooting now, which is a bummer because we are ready to get back to work.
Sorry, but I want the writers to get paid.
I don't think what they're asking for is unreasonable.
Not at all.
And I think they should as well. And, you know, during the day, that's the difference with how comedy has changed is that, you know, when you did TV on network TV, you get paid and then you get paid twice because you get the residual for when it played again in reruns over the summer.
And you got orders that made it possible for you to make a living as a writer. It's a little harder in streaming with shorter orders.
Yeah.
And look, I do a podcast that's all about television. That's all about media. I want this to go on and I want storytelling to be something that you can do as a vocation. So anyway.
And people are good at it and special. And yes. You're right. Drew Carey, we used to do 26 a year.
I remember that time.
Right? Yeah. And then you'd get 26 residuals coming after.
And you did musical episodes and you did this big, broad comedy. And, you know, that show was a juggernaut. That show was absolutely huge. By the way, shout out to Drew Carey for buying free lunches for the writers in Los Angeles. He's been buying lunches at Swingers in Los Angeles for the striking writers, which he did in the previous strike as well. Krista. Yeah. This has been so great. And I hope things are resolved for the writers. I hope that the actors get a good new contract as well, because got to protect that as well. But what a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking some time today.
Dan, thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to meet you and talk to you. I hope I get to talk to you again.